Book of Ruth. We finished Judges, and now we move on to the short book of Ruth. Just two lessons in this book, but what an interesting story. So many neat things here in the book named after the lady named Ruth. One of two books in the Bible named after a lady, and I think you'll enjoy this study. Brother Gall really gets the good lesson. He'll be teaching about the kinsman redeemer and what a great thing that is. But there's some good stuff here leading up to that, and so we'll be trying to cover the first two chapters of the book. Let me get my thing here going. The title of the lesson is today, Ruth Devoted to Duty. Our text will be 1:1 through 2:23, which covers the first two chapters. And I've chosen as the key verses, different than the lesson book. And I, maybe it's not a good thing, I pretty much tend to ignore that and my own study, but I think the key verses here are verses 16 and 17 of chapter 1. Ruth said, "Entreat me not," you know this saying, "entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. My people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught or anything but death part thee and me." And we'll come back to those verses again. As we seek the context this morning, the book of Ruth is a beautiful story during an ugly time. The setting of the book of Ruth is the time of the judges. And as you've heard over and over in the last few weeks, it was a time when everyone did that which was right in his own eyes. I mean, that's the very definition of anarchy. And we know that that doesn't work. But the events of this book, the book of Ruth, illustrate how God takes care of faithful people, even during faithless times. We could, of course, point to our own nation, and we see many things being done that are against the Bible, against God's commandments, against biblical principles, and things that are being legislated as being normal that are not. We talk about, you know, same-sex marriage and just gender question and all that. Well, even during those times, God takes care of His people. And I don't know about you, I haven't missed any meals yet. And you can tell by looking, I'm sure. But we also see in this story that God has always had believers among the Gentiles as well as the Jews. Gentile evangelism did not begin with the book of Acts. There have always been Gentile believers. Ruth was not a Jew, of course. She was a Gentile. She was of Moab. And yet she embraced the true God. We read it just a minute ago. "Thy God shall be my God," she told Naomi. And I think that's maybe one reason why she chose to go back to Israel with Naomi when Naomi returned, was that her belief, her faith, was aligned with that of the Jewish people rather than with Moab. And she perhaps would have felt more at home in a strange land than in her own land. And how true that is. When we become a Christian, it changes our whole way of thinking about things. It changes what we're comfortable with. And we want to spend time around God's people rather than among unbelievers. Well, in return, God embraced Ruth and blessed her immensely, gave her a new husband, and gave her a new child as well. And perhaps the greatest blessing for Ruth, she became part of the lineage of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. In Matthew 1, verses 5 and 6, and I've left out part of it, but it says, Boaz begat Obed of Ruth. So that was the child that they had together. And Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David the king. And of course it goes on from there, and we know that Jesus came through the lineage of David. So it's a wonderful story of God's blessing, God's providence, and working in a bad situation to bring about a good outcome. So now we go on to searching the text. And first of all, we're going to do chapter 1. Isn't that amazing? You would have thought I would have done chapter 2 first, but no, I'm going to do chapter 1. And I've got some points here that I want to have us to notice. First of all, the drought. Look at verse 1 of chapter 1. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. Likely this was a result of God's punishment on Israel. And even if Elimelech and Naomi were godly people, it says it rains on the just and the unjust. Well, there's a drought on the just and the unjust as well. And so God is dealing with, my wife decided to come to class today. Isn't that neat? Now I've got to change everything I was planning to say. But, no, I'm kidding. Where was I? I'm totally off track now. But anyway, there was a drought in the land. Secondly, we notice the departure. Last part of the verse 1, it says, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons, and the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came into the country of Moab and continued there. This was a terrible decision on the part of Elimelech and Naomi. Moab was no place for the children of God. I know that they probably felt they had no choice but to look for help elsewhere, but Moab, as I said, was no place for God's people. Moabites were the descendants of Lot through an incestuous relationship that he had with his daughter, and that's a sordid story in itself. They were the sworn enemies of Israel. And you know, the Lord issued a warning that was similar to this in Isaiah 31:1. Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help. And Egypt, Moab, or whatever. It said, and stay on horses and trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. But they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. So there's plenty of warnings in the Word of God against doing what is convenient, doing what might seem to be pragmatic at the time, and depart from the environment that of godliness. And of course, Israel was not exactly a shining example of godliness in those days, but it wasn't anything like Moab. And Moab was an evil place, a wicked place. And Elimelech and Naomi had no business going there. And they stayed much longer than they intended. Notice in verse 1, it says they went to sojourn. Now, sojourn is a short visit. I mean, just going to stay a while. In fact, part of the etymology of the word, it has to do with being a guest in somebody's house. You don't want to wear out your welcome, right? So you don't stay long And you've heard the old saying about somebody who stayed too long, and the people said, "Honey, let's go to bed so these folks can leave." And okay, I thought it was rather humorous, but you don't want to overstay your welcome. Well, they went to sojourn or have a short visit, but notice what it says in verse 2. At the end of the verse, it says they came into the country of Moab and continued there. They went to sojourn, but they continued. Now look ahead to verse 4. We'll get there in a minute, but I want you to see the last part of the verse. It says, and they dwell there about 10 years. They went to sojourn, they continued, and they dwelled. It typifies sin, doesn't it? Somebody had a famous quote, sin will take you farther than you want to go. Sin will keep you longer than you want to stay. Sin will cost you more than you want to pay. And it was made into a song by the cathedrals, made it popular. But that's true of sin. It will keep you longer than you plan to stay. So they sojourned. That's what they went to do, but they continued, and eventually they dwelled in Moab. Well, that brings us to the next point, and that is the deaths. Look at verse 3. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now, we don't want to suggest that God killed him because he went to Moab. That's not our place to determine. But he died. And while they were in Moab, verse 4, and it says she was left and her two sons, and they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. Verse 5, and Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. So Elimelech dies in Moab. No doubt this is a tragedy for Naomi, which is made so much worse by being in a strange land among wicked people. This would have been a desperate time, and it got even worse, and that is that the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, after they had married Orpah and Ruth, and by the way, God had warned Israel over and over against intermarrying with those who served other gods. And in fact, that's the primary reason for most of the troubles that the Jews had during the time of the Judges. If you go back to the beginning of the book, it says that when they went into the land, that the tribes did not drive out all the inhabitants. God had told them, just run them all out. You don't want to leave any of them there. Well, they didn't do it. And we have over and over, this tribe, they did not drive out all the inhabitants of this land. And this tribe, same thing. And so there were a lot of ungodly people yet remaining in the land of Canaan. And they did not obey God and drive out all the pagan inhabitants of the land, and they ended up intermarrying with them. Listen, this wasn't a racial problem. It was a spiritual problem. I don't have an issue if an American man marries a Filipino woman or a Japanese, whatever, or the other way around. I mean, it happens. And that's not a racial problem, but it could be a spiritual problem. And God tells us not to marry outside our faith. And God knew that the idolatry that would result from taking spouses of another faith. And yet that's exactly what the two sons did. And I'm not making excuses for them, but I mean, let's face it, the boys' parents put them in that position. They grew up in Moab. What do you expect? Young men get up to marrying age, and they want a sweetheart. They want to get married. And when you're in Moab, I guess you marry Moabite ladies or women. So within a relatively short time, they were only there 10 years, so both of the boys die during that time. And that leaves three desperate widows. There were very few options for a single or a widowed woman to make a living. No Social Security, no pensions, nothing like that. They were very much dependent upon their marriage relationship and for the husband to provide. A little different now. We have the various programs that can help widows, and let's face it, a lot of women work now. I'm not being critical. I'm just saying in the times in which we're describing, they didn't have many options like that. Well, that brings us to the next point, and that is the decision. Verse 6. Then she, that's Naomi, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. Notice this, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. They had a famine, but they weren't wiped out. God had provided for them. Verse 7, wherefore she went out of the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. So, verse 6 says, God had provided for his people, and they only heard about it, and no doubt when she heard this, she was very remorseful. I'm sort of reading between the lines here, but I think she was remorseful for the family's move to Moab. And she realizes that it was a bad decision. And we'll see her regrets as the story progresses. And Naomi decides to head back to her home in Bethlehem, and her two daughters follow her. Let's go on reading. Verse 8. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, they're on their way. She says, she stops and she says, hey, go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. In other words, you've been good to me and I appreciate the thought, but you need to go back. Verse 9, the Lord grant you that he may find rest each of you in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them and lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, surely we will return with thee unto thy people. No, we're going to go with you. We'll take care of you, whatever. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them? She's saying, it's ridiculous for you to think that I might be able to provide you with new husbands and have a child. Would you wait on them? You would be so much older. I mean, it just, she's sort of just shoving the idea aside. Last part of verse 3. Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She realized that she was reaping the consequences of her actions, her and Elimelech going to Moab. And it may have been that God's hand was against her, she thought it, but it may have been that she was just suffering the natural consequences of poor decisions. So that's the situation. And where am I here? Naomi decided to head back to Bethlehem, her two daughters and all followers, and she says, no, we'll go with you. And after she made her sad declaration in verses 11 through 12 and 13, then Orpah kisses Naomi and turns back. Let's read verse 14. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law. Kissed her goodbye. I guess I'm going back to my own country. We want to see the next thing here. That's the devotion. It says, Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. I don't know if she did it literally, but it seems that she just grabbed her and said, don't make me leave. Don't make me go back. She said, verse 15, this is Naomi talking. She said, look, behold, thy sister-in-law has gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. You might as well just go on back to the room. There's no future with me. There's no future for you in Israel. And then we come to those verses I already read, verses 16 and 17. Whither thou goest, don't make me go back. Whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. So she's embracing what we now call Christianity. She was embracing faith in the true God. And she, as I said, she probably would feel more at home in the strange land of Israel with those that shared her faith than at home in Moab, where she would be, she would not have that type of community of faith. Statement here in verses 16 and 17, you may have heard this used in a wedding ceremony. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not the original context in which it was said. But it's a great statement, not only of devotion to Naomi, but even more of faith in God. I believe that Ruth was a true believer. Human relationships will only take us so far in devotion. Orpah had an affectionate relationship toward Naomi, but when she counted all the costs, she said, I'm going back home. But Ruth not only had a relationship with Naomi, she had a relationship with God. She loved Naomi, but she loved God even more. And so she was devoted to Naomi and returned to Israel with her. Now we go on and notice the difference. Beginning in we should have read verse 18. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. He said, all right, I'm not going to try to convince you anymore. If your mind's made up, and listen, when ladies get their mind made up, men, quit arguing. You're not going to get anywhere anyway. So Naomi takes Ruth and they head back toward Bethlehem. Now, verse 19, so they too went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them, and they said, is this Naomi? No doubt. She came back, and the people recognized her, but they said, is this Naomi? I think that her time in Moab and the deaths of her husband and her sons had caused a change in her appearance. You know, you can often tell by a person's appearance. And this happens in men, but especially in women. You see that hard look. You ever notice? I'm sure you probably noticed that. A woman that has lived a hard life. Life of sin, life of heartache, and various things, they get a look about them in their face that, us men, we're supposed to look that way. You know, we're supposed to look rugged and chiseled and all that. But women, we expect them to show a beauty and a softness about their appearance. And I think that has changed in Naomi. And they said, is this Naomi? Naomi, you don't look like you used to look. What's she saying in verse 20? And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. Don't call me Naomi. The word Naomi means pleasant. And I believe she probably had been a pleasant person in life earlier on. But she says, don't call me pleasant, call me Mara, which means bitter. She said, the Lord hath dealt, the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. And she was bitter. I think that as we see the story unfolding here in Ruth, that maybe she'll lose some of that bitterness. But right now, she's very, very bitter. Maybe even against God, but certainly against the circumstances of life. Now look at verse 21. She said, "I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty." I want to stop right there and say that this is an amazing statement. Naomi and Elimelech left Bethlehem and went to Moab because they thought they were empty and they needed to be filled. But now, through the bitterness of her mind, Naomi realizes that just the opposite is true. She said, "I went out full, and the Lord has brought me back empty." That's something to think about when we are tempted to stray, maybe into sin or maybe just into bad decisions in life. And we think we're empty and we've got to go do this or do that to be filled. Remember, if you have the Lord, then you're full. Don't go to Moab, symbolically speaking. Don't stray from the paths of the Lord. Don't stray from the people of God and from the right relationship that will keep you in line with the Lord and His ways. Remember this statement. "So I went out full. The Lord has brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi? Why do you call me pleasant? Seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me." So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. So they're back now, and let's see what happens. Well, we go on now from chapter 1 to guess what? Chapter 2. All right. The first thing we see in chapter 2 is the provision. Let's look at verses 1 through 4. "And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz." Now, Boaz is introduced here, but Naomi is not thinking about Boaz, and she doesn't tell Ruth, "You need to seek out Boaz," and we'll say more about that in a minute. But in verse 2, "And Ruth the Moabite said unto Naomi, Let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, Go, my daughter." Now, the people of God had a law. The Jews had a law that said that they were to provide for the poor and the widows in a certain way. And here in Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10, "When you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of the harvest, and thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of the vineyard, thou shalt leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." So he says, I'm God, and this is how I'm going to provide for the poor. Don't pick your fields clean. He says, go ahead and do your reaping, you can harvest your crops, but don't be OCD about it. I'm not OCD, I'm CDO. That's OCD, but with the letters in the right order. All right. He said, don't be meticulous. Don't pick every little thing. He says, you leave some there. And whatever is in the corners of the field, you go through and get what's obvious and what's readily available, but you leave the rest for the poor and the stranger. So let's look at now verse 3. That's the law of gleaning, by the way. That's how God provided for the poor and the widow. Verse 3. "And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and," notice this, "and her half was to lie on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech." This just happened. She just happened. Remember, we got introduced to Boaz, who was a of the family of Elimelech. He was a wealthy man and a mighty man. And it just so happened that Ruth ended up in his field. Now, do we believe it just happened? Well, no, we know that it's the providence of God. And we'll say more about that before we're done. But in verses 2 and 3, we see that, let's read, "And her half was to lie on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech." The point I want to make out of this is that Ruth was willing to work. She wasn't lazy. She wasn't, didn't sit around all poor, pitiful me. She said, "Naomi, is it okay if I go and glean in the field?" It was the time of harvest, and so it was a good time to be gleaning. And "Is it okay if I go?" And Naomi said yes, and Ruth went to work. And you have to admire that in anyone, especially the ladies that are willing to work. Read Proverbs chapter 31, and you find that the Proverbs 31 lady was very industrious, and she was not afraid to work. Now we get into the next point, and that is the passion. This is where the romance begins. Sometimes Ruth is called, the book of Ruth is called the romance of redemption. And so in verse 4, it says that, well, let's read that. Verse 4, "Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, The Lord be with you. And they answered him, The Lord bless thee." So we see that Boaz was apparently a nice man. He was a good man. He had a good relationship with his workers even. And he came and said, "The Lord be with you." You know, he didn't walk up and start cracking the whips. "Oh, come on, you bunch of no good, you know, slappers. Give it, get busy, get to reaping." No, he came and had a conversation with them. "The Lord be with thee." And they said, "The Lord bless thee." They were muttering under their breath, "I don't know if the Lord strikes you dead." No, they said, "The Lord bless you." He had a good relationship. So we see something about the character of Boaz there in that verse. Well, verse 5 now begins the point of the thing about the romance. "And then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, Whose damsel is this?" He took notice. There might have been other reapers, other gleaners there in the field, but "Whose damsel is this?" "And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, It is Moabite's damsel who came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab." And she said, this is, they're quoting what she said. She said, "I pray you let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and had continued even from morning until now that she carried a little in the house. She took a break. "And then said Boaz unto Ruth, Hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go under the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn." Now, Boaz, I think it was love at first sight, to be honest. He saw, "Whose damsel is this?" And I think that he was attracted to her beauty. I'm just guessing, but he saw her, and he, you know, his eyes got about this big around. And who is this? It's Ruth. And he noticed her. Then we go on, let's see, in verse 10. "Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, Why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother in the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore." Not only was he attracted to her beauty, but he was attracted to her character as well. He investigated and got the story about how Ruth had taken care of Naomi and followed her into the land, and now was working hard to provide for her and as well as herself. And he was no doubt impressed by that. Look at verses. Let's get down to verse 15. And when she was risen up to glean, well, I can't skip all this. Verse 14. And Boaz said unto her, at meal time, come down hither and eat of the bread and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched horn, and she did eat and was sufficed, and left. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheep. You let her have anything she wants. Even if she starts pulling stuff out of that, because oh, you've already gathered it up. If she wants some of that, you give it to her. And verse 16, and let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them that she may glean them and rebuke her not. He says, you take some of the corn that you've already reaped and toss it down for her to pick up. I mean, he was not about to let Ruth get away. He said, I'm going to take care of this girl. And so verse 17, and she gleaned in the field until even and beat out that she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. So we see Boaz falling in love. And there's going to be more about that in the next two chapters. But that brings my third point very quickly, and that is the providence. Beginning of verse 18. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. In other words, she came home with a big haul for a gleaning session. I mean, normally they would expect just to get enough to survive on, but she came back with a big bundle of stuff. And her mother-in-law said unto her, where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. She said, I don't know where you went, but wherever you went, somebody was very generous. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought and said, the man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. Boaz, the near kinsman of Elimelech, and therefore by marriage of Naomi. Verse 20, and Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. Naomi is realizing that God is still providing for her. She may have had a bitter experience in Moab, but even now, as she's come home, God is taking care of her. And Naomi said unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. She said, Ruth, you won't believe this, but the fellow that you just happened to latch on to in his field and glean turns out to be the near kinsman, Naomi, or Boaz. He was akin to Naomi. Verse 21. And Ruth the Moabitess said, he said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. You're not going to go anywhere else to glean. I'll make sure there's something there for you to pick up. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. It's good for you. I mean, Naomi sees the opportunity here. And I don't think it's opportunistic what she did. But she encourages Ruth, stay with Boaz. He'll treat you right. I don't know if she had in mind that they were going to fall in love and get married or not, but she said she knew that it was a good thing for Ruth to be in the fields of Boaz. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean under the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So Naomi asked the question, where did you glean today? And as I said, Naomi did not send her to Boaz. It was just happened, according to verse 3. It just happened. But we know that in God's plan, nothing just happens. Naomi recognizes God's hand at work in this situation. God had guided Ruth to the estate of a near kinsman. He was a kinsman on Elimelech's side. Ruth had not planned to glean in the field of her future kinsman redeemer, but God did. God directed her there. Ruth was not conniving and working to attract the attention of Boaz. She was simply working to provide for herself and her mother-in-law, and God blessed her in catching the eye of a man who would become her husband. Ruth was faithful in doing what she needed to do. She was devoted to her duty. She was working hard. She was providing for her and her mother-in-law. And it just turned out, by the providence of God, that she ended up in the field of Boaz. So, there she was. And God is going to bless this situation. So we set the application, lastly. The book of Ruth is a love story. It's a story of God's love and provision for His people. It's a story of Ruth's love for Naomi and how she worked to provide for the two of them. It's a story of Boaz's love for Ruth, both her beauty and her faith. It's a story of Ruth's love for Boaz, recognizing that God had sent her to him and had sent him to her. And then it's a story of how both Ruth and Boaz loved God and were blessed in return. And hey, listen, this story is just warming up. You're going to want to come back next week and find out what happens. This is better than a Hallmark movie, isn't it? Especially you women, you're going to love the way it works out. I promise. All right, let's pray. Father, we thank you for this story. And it starts out in a bad way, but we see how you can turn the bad and use it for good. Things that we mean for evil, you mean for our blessing. And so we pray that you'll bless in our continued study of this book. Now bless the following service. Be our pastor as he brings the message in Jesus' name. Amen.